presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I'm not always the most organized thinker. Sometimes I take in a bunch of information. You know, you hear me talk really, really fast on the show a lot. I think part of the reason why I talk so fast is because, at least I'd like to think, now maybe this isn't as true as I wish that it was, I'd like to think my brain's just moving really fast, and that's why my mouth is sort of flapping at 100 miles an hour all the time. That's what I'd like to think. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not. But the point is, I'm not always the best, because of the way my brain kind of works, I'm not always the best at cataloging information, kind of deciding what's important now and what matters now, kind of establishing a little bit of a hierarchy of things in my brain. Sometimes I have a tendency to sort of absorb it all at once, and it can be difficult to process all the thoughts that you're taking in, all the information that you're gathering. One of the ways in which that really shows up is this time of year, as we head towards the start of the early signing period for recruiting, which begins Wednesday, which is obviously tomorrow. You know, we've heard so much recruiting talk, so many names kicked around. There's so much out there. It's sort of difficult to know, okay, so what matters now, and what's the order in which kind of all this is going to happen? And what are the things by the end of the day tomorrow that we'll learn about Georgia, either for the good or for the bad? And what's the stuff we're still going to have to wait on? So I thought it might be appropriate to start the show with this today. We'll talk to Jeff Sintel about this later on as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Jeff has also written a good bit about this at the forum at forum.dognation.com and on the website at dognation.com. And we kind of by now have gotten used to the fact that, you know, it's waiting until early January, to find out about Kelee Ringo. It's waiting until early January to find out about Darnell Washington. Those are guys who are expected to make their announcement, you know, a little bit later on. You know, you may even have to wait a good bit longer than that to find out if Georgia's going to hold on to a guy like Broderick Jones, the five-star offensive line commit that's seemingly been one of the centerpieces of this class for a while. You may have to wait for a while to find out about him. Cedric Von Prahn, you know, Georgia getting that ink on the letter of intent. Probably waiting for a while to find out about that. So there's some waiting that's going on, but there's tomorrow, starting with the beginning of the early signing period, a chance to learn a whole bunch. And so here are some of the things that I think are going to be really, really fun to follow. Here are the things I'm looking forward to learning, either for the good or for the bad, when the early signing period begins tomorrow. Let me start with five-star defensive lineman Jordan Birch, who we now know is going to make his announcement on Wednesday as opposed to Thursday. A lot of changing in his schedule, a lot of alterations about when he was going to do it, where he was going to do it, which is ultimately kind of in keeping with the mystery that's been out there for Birch the entirety of the time. You know the backstory on this right now. This is a very contested recruitment involving the hometown team, South Carolina, another in-state team, Clemson, LSU and Alabama trying to get their, you know, way in the mix there, and Georgia, who's kind of solidly been in this position with Birch for weeks and weeks, months and months and months, getting a chance to host him for a number of visits, including a high-profile official visit this past weekend at the end of that cycle, right before the early signing period begins on Wednesday. Certainly the case that you can make and the sense that you get is that Georgia has put itself in quite a nice position when it comes to Jordan Birch. Now, no one can actually predict what Birch is going to do, but certainly when you look at the publicly available evidence, it certainly seems like Georgia's done a really good job here with this recruitment. And this is one of those things. You know, is Birch as good as Trayvon Walker in the fact that Walker, as a freshman defensive lineman, was able to step in, play right away, really be a key contributor for Georgia this year? Only time will tell if Birch is that good. My interest in Birch, admittedly, is not so much because I think that Birch is a game-changing, game-wrecking player as a freshman in the SEC in 2020. He might be, but my interest in Birch is really more about the contested nature of the recruitment. I just love like the Pier 6 brawl this time of year, and I love it when it involves all the big major programs, and I love it when Kirby Smart kind of puts himself against the wall here, going into enemy territory, Columbia, South Carolina, SEC program, going into that town and trying to pull Jordan Birch out. If you want to find out where the prowess of Georgia ranks in terms of its recruiting acumen right now, Kirby Smart in particular, the Jordan Birch decision on that will be a huge bellwether in that regard. And it's one of the reasons why Dog Nation tomorrow, among the things that we plan on really providing on the video channels and all across the site, all across our platforms, heavy coverage of Jordan Birch when he makes his announcement tomorrow afternoon. Dog Nation is going to be all over it for good reason. But that's not the only thing interesting worth following here. I'm also really curious if Georgia adds a second quarterback tomorrow. That's another big part of this storyline. Now, I would say that the odds are right now, if we're thinking about it being a C.J. Stroud, if I had to bet, if we were, you know, at some sports book somewhere that took odds on commitments and who's going where, I don't reckon I would bet on Georgia getting C.J. Stroud tomorrow. But admittedly, you know, a quarterback to pair with, you know, who's already in the mix, a quarterback to kind of go along with what Georgia already has, maybe adding to the quarterback depth, especially given the fact that DeJuan Mathis is still dealing with an injury, I should say an illness recovery after surgery, especially given that the future beyond Jake Fromm is kind of clouded. The second big storyline I'm paying attention to is, you know, would a guy like C.J. Stroud, after being in Columbus this past weekend, taking that visit to Ohio State, thought to have some affection for the Buckeyes, would he actually choose Georgia? I'm not necessarily betting that he would, but it's at least one of those interesting storylines that I'm paying attention to. Now, more significant than that, and maybe for Georgia on Wednesday, the most significant storyline of all, not an easy pull here, but something that you're going to be watching very closely and examining very carefully. Starting with Wednesday's early signing period beginning, can Georgia drastically upgrade its wide receiver situation? That actually may be more interesting, more important for Georgia than even the Jordan Burch news. Even though Burch ranks amongst the nation's best players, Georgia's need right now is at wide receiver. Everyone who watched this season knows that. Kirby Smart addressed that over and over and over again. Can Georgia upgrade that position, starting with recruiting, on Wednesday? And the two names to know here are obviously Arian Smith and Jermaine Burton. Maybe you'd say that Smith's a little easier pull for Georgia right now than Burton might be. Honestly, I'm not quite sure where things stand with Jermaine Burton. I think it's really good that Georgia, as it was reported, got a chance to host him this past weekend. That obviously helps. But the school in which Burton's currently committed, LSU, is obviously the biggest brand out there in terms of offensive firepower right now. That's the kind of thing I'm guessing Burton has probably noticed. And the kind of thing that I'm sure has probably swayed Burton here this year. Is this a winnable recruiting battle for Georgia? Well, last year they surprised by bringing in George Pickens. It certainly wouldn't be quite as much of a surprise to bring in Burton right now. Maybe at least, you know, comparatively speaking, but that may be the biggest storyline of them all. You know, can Georgia add an Arian Smith, a very speedy wide receiver? Can it add a Jermaine Burton, a true legit playmaker who's got fairly strong ties to Georgia given his relationship with former UGA great Terrence Edwards? But these are big stories, big names we'll be following very closely all day on Wednesday. A couple other things to mention here. Georgia could possibly be turning to the ranks of former SEC commits to bolster its defensive back situation. Georgia here late in the process is looking to add more defensive backs. One of the guys that could be is Eric Reed, former Ole Miss commit. That's a guy that Jeff Sintel has recently written about at DogNation.com, and I invite you to read that story. No pun intended. Certainly seems like Georgia and Reed have become pretty fast friends here. Is that a former SEC commit that Georgia uses to add to its depth when it comes to the defensive back situation? The same thing for Major Burns, former LSU commit. Another one of these guys where it seems like, at least the publicly available information, it has happened with Georgia and Burns pretty fast. Georgia needs more defensive backs. It'll wait on Keely Ringo, obviously, but maybe using these guys to add to those ranks here late in the process and then making that official on Wednesday. That's one of those things that we'll follow. And then finally, there's this, and we're definitely going to talk to Jeff Sintel about this in a moment. In addition to the guys who are uncommitted that Georgia's trying to bring in, one of the really interesting storylines is going to end up being of the currently committed Georgia players, is it able to hold on to all those guys? And in particular, the position group we'll be paying attention to is probably along the offensive line. And in the story that I referenced a little earlier from Jeff Sintel at DogNation.com, where he kind of laid out the timeline of everything that's going to happen Wednesday, what you have to wait till January on, what you may have to wait till February on, there was one little nugget that I hope that you didn't miss, because maybe it kind of got buried in there. Georgia offensive line commit Chad Lindberg, who came to the program after Andrew Rame decided to stay with his home state school and choose Oklahoma. Lindberg came in and seemingly kind of took that spot from Andrew Rame, but will Lindberg continue to occupy that spot beyond Wednesday? Here's what Jeff wrote about this, about Chad Lindberg, that he told Dog Nation on Monday that he's going to sign on December the 18th. That's the beginning of the early signing period, but he did not announce where that was going to be. So Lindberg apparently still up in the air about what his ultimate decision is going to be. Now, Georgia's got some depth of the offensive line. If Lindberg were to choose to go elsewhere, it's not a catastrophic scenario for Georgia necessarily, but it would be a little bit of an indicator about kind of where things stand with Matt Luke. How many of those current offensive line commits was Luke able to hold on to? He's already gotten the big win with Tate Ratledge, who, you know, kind of among the guys we've talked about, is probably the superior prospect in that discussion. But could Lindbergh's decision one way or another be a little bit of a foreshadowing of what Broderick Jones is going to end up doing? I think that's one of those storylines worth watching. A lot of that involves guys who aren't committed anywhere yet. The Dog fans hope commit, then sign to UGA. But keep your eye on the Lindbergh thing as well. A Georgia commit, will he maintain that status? Will he sign with Georgia? You better believe we'll be watching that closely on Wednesday and talking to Jeff Sintel about that topic coming up here in just a couple of minutes. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon on App and Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them. Just really glad to have you with us here today, and I really appreciate you being a part of the program. We will get Jeff Sintel here coming up in just a moment. We'll talk to him about kind of everything going on with the final late stages when it comes to recruiting stuff. I don't want to make the show solely about recruiting, though, because Georgia obviously has a game it's getting ready for coming up in a few weeks against Baylor in the Sugar Bowl, and we are kind of putting the finishing touches on the evaluation of the 2019 season. I tweeted about this yesterday. I noticed that the AP All-American team was announced. Rodrigo Blankenship, I believe, got second team honors for him as an AP All-American kicker. But there were two Georgia guys that got honored as Associated Press first team All-Americans. And I just think that's an incredible accomplishment. And I'm like anybody else, that this time of year, there are so many awards. You know, we have like multiple Coach of the Year awards. We have, I think, two different awards that go to the top defensive player in the country. We have multiple awards to the top quarterback, and kind of on and on and on we go. There can be sort of award fatigue sometimes, sort of honor fatigue sometimes of, you know, who was nominated for what and who won what. But two guys, Georgia left tackle Andrew Thomas, safety J.R. Reed, being named first-team Associated Press All-Americans, that's actually a pretty staggering accomplishment. I think it really speaks well to the careers that both those guys are able to put together in a Georgia uniform. And I was just thinking back on the season that these two guys have had, and really the career in which both these guys have had. You know, before the Florida game, Kirby Smart was talking about Thomas, and he was also mentioning Isaiah Wilson kind of in the same you know, breath, but in talking about Thomas and Wilson before the Florida game, I thought Kirby Smart kind of laid it out just about how valuable it is to have a tackle in the program who's been able to do what Andrew Thomas has been able to do for Georgia. We almost overlook it because he was such a given so much for Georgia this season, but to see him honored yesterday, first team Associated Press All-American, is a reminder of just how valuable he has been, and as Kirby Smart has said, just how rare a find it is to see a big guy as big as Thomas, who can be as athletic as he's been for the Dogs. Here is Kirby on the first team All-American.
When you line up with two tackles in this league that have played, you're very fortunate because tackles are hard to come by, and good ones are really hard to come by. Do the math. How many 6'6 guys are walking around? There's not a lot. 6'6, 300 that can move? Very few. So it's hard to find guys like that. We have been blessed. Sam has done a great job recruiting to get those guys. And I mean, they're not perfect either. They have to go against really good players. But I'm very pleased with those guys, and they are great competitors and they're good leaders.
So as I said before, he's mentioning both Thomas and Wilson in that sentence, but it's obviously Thomas who Georgia fans are probably going to get ready to say goodbye to and get used to life without. And as Kirby Smart kind of alludes to, that is not an easy thing to consider, how you find someone to replace the obvious value that Andrew Thomas has brought to the program. And it's probably true for J.R. Reed on the other side of the ball as well, a first team AP All-American safety. And we, as much as anybody, may be guilty of sometimes not giving J.R. Reed his credit, both for the value that he brought to the field for Georgia this season. Admittedly, I was a little bit surprised that, you know, he got such a high honor, not because I didn't think he's a great player, just because maybe we also just kind of overlook his true value, what he brings to the Dogs. And in overlooking that, I think what we may also be guilty of when it comes to Reed from time to time is overlooking an amazing story. This is a guy who came to Georgia from Tulsa, who was a completely unheralded player when he arrived, but has worked and developed and grown. And, you know, from the get-go, he was a good player. It was a guy that was pretty obvious was going to have a home at Georgia and have a chance to play, but he's become kind of a spectacular player. And, you know, he said something after the Notre Dame win, when Georgia got that win early in the season, And he kind of talked about what that meant. And there's a way to listen in on Reed's story here about winning the game against Notre Dame and read into this that the value that he brought to the program, the wins that he contributed to, they could have an echo that extends beyond this year. With that in mind, here is J.R. Reed talking about the process of really believing in each other and building that foundation for the Dogs. Here's J.R. Reed.
It just showed everyone that it's a new era, and it showed everyone we buy in to a program, then you know, Coach Smart and Coach Smart's way, we can be very good. We can be the best team that we want to be. The sky's the limit.
And obviously, at the end of this season, that didn't end up coming true to the extent that Reed probably wanted it to. But when he uses phrase like, hey, when you buy into a new era, you know, the sky can be the limit. You know, I think sometimes for veteran football players, they learn to appreciate the fact that they may not be the players that ultimately hoist the national championship trophy, but they can be a part of the foundation laid that makes that possible for future generations. And the standard that J.R. Reed has set, the way in which he's gone about his business, I do think paves the way for future Georgia players to enjoy even more success and one day achieve that goal that Reed suggests as possible, the sky being the limit, the ultimate prize being accessible to Georgia. The work that J.R. Reed has done in a Georgia uniform certainly makes that a possibility. So to he, to Rodrigo Blankenship, to Andrew Thomas, the guys honored as All-Americans, what amazing careers they've had at Georgia. If for Thomas, it is indeed done. Tremendous, tremendous examples of what great football is all about, and really an opportunity for future Georgia players to follow in those footsteps and hopefully live into and embody the classy way in which all these guys have represented UGA during their careers. It's really great to see. It's Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll have more on the Dogs on the field coming up later on in our program. For now, though, let's kind of dive a little bit deeper into the recruiting storylines. National Signing Day, early signing period begins tomorrow. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel about that as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
I want to bring in Jeff Sintel here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Jeff is all over the place. Forum.DogNation.com on the website of DogNation.com. Going to have him on video a lot tomorrow. I'm going to see if I can twist his arm and get him to pop on Dog Nation Daily as well and answer a few questions as the storylines kind of unfold during the day. Jeff, this is a time of year that I just love. I love how fast the news cycle spins. Obviously, as a UGA fan, I'm excited to see the way in which Georgia is kind of in the mix for a lot of big names here. This is a good time to be following recruiting, is it not?
Yeah, Brendan, I think I'll harken back to a phrase that Marlowe's Tavern patron told us on our pre-SEC championship game visit down there at Peachtree Corners. He called it commitments. Yeah. And I think that's a very good way to look at it, phrase it, to drum up the expectations. Wednesday is commitments for Georgia, and there'll be a few days like that this cycle.
All right, so let me try to cover as much ground as possible that I can here during our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Let me start with a little thing you dropped into the story that you wrote yesterday, kind of looking at the timeline of events for Wednesday and then beyond as the 2020 cycle kind of comes to a close here over the course of the next couple of months. The possibility that Georgia offensive line commit Chad Lindberg might be looking around, might not quite have enough time to develop the relationship with Matt Luke that he once had with Sam Pittman. How real is that right now? Is Georgia on the lookout out for Lindberg not to join this 2020 class?
Well, I think what you're hearing there, number one, is Chad told me yesterday that he was going to sign somewhere on Wednesday. Now, there's some clarity there that I think maybe Chad wants to kind of leave for the moment. I think there's reports also trickling out that he's going to sign with Georgia on Wednesday as well. But it'll be very interesting to see what he actually might sign with Georgia, whether that's one of those financial aid forms or whether that's the true bona fide letter of intent. Because, as you know, Lindberg is not a guy that's going to enroll early. He's going to spend his senior year, his full senior year at Clear Creek High School in Texas. This is the nation's number 17 offensive tackle, a top 200 player. He could be one of those Cade Mays type Swiss Army Bulldogs in Matt Luke's offensive line. Still going to take a while to get used to saying that really fast on air. But I think Lindberg is a guy that it seems like to me, when that big Tate Ratledge piece came back into the Great Wall of Georgia, because it can still be a Great Wall of Georgia, to me, I think my initial forecast was I thought Georgia could keep at least three, maybe four of the five offensive linemen that were committed. And Lindbergh, it'd be very interesting to see if he signs the true letter of intent on Wednesday, or whether he just signs the financial aid form. For folks that don't know what the financial aid form is, that's the form where it binds the school to you, but does not bind the prospect to the school.
Along those lines, is there any chance that Georgia could get that letter of intent in front of Broderick Jones tomorrow and have him sign that, or is he just intent, no pun intended, to hold out until February?
Yeah, I guess a lot of people are wanting to bang the Broderick Jones drum a lot this week. I don't know if it's for clicks. I don't know whether they're actually noticing some things or hearing some things. I mean, to me, Broderick was a guy that was not likely to sign, even if Sam Pittman was still the head coach, was still not the head coach at Arkansas and was still in Athens. Maybe Sam Pittman and Georgia would have goosed him at the 11th hour to sign it. But now I think this just gives Broderick a chance to, you know, look at everything again, try to build that relationship with Matt Luke. Right now he's very busy playing basketball. He was in Alabama all day Saturday with the number one team in the state from Georgia's Class 5A. Broderick Jones, to me, it seems like he's going to just take two officials in January. That's Auburn and Georgia. And our reporting last week still indicates a very, very, very strong chance that he does end up staying committed, never decommitting from Georgia, and eventually winds up a Bulldog.
But if that letter of intent is not signed, I mean, the door is certainly open for, and you've written about Auburn kind of swooping in there. I mean, that door is open. You know, I've kind of said this on the show before, just speaking as a fan here, I have a hard time considering a player committed if he lets December go by without signing. I mean, you know, he may still come to Georgia. Hard for me to view him as a commit, though, if that's indeed what happens.
Well, Brandon, I mean, I love you, brother, but, like, that's where I think you're really echoing and channeling your inner fandom right there. The same thing's going to happen with Cedric Von Tron. He's not going to sign on Wednesday. He's a Georgia commitment. Does it make I know that maybe Cedric Von Tron has a better reason. That's because he told the staff in advance, even with Sam Pittman in place, that he wasn't likely to sign during the early period anyway. The thing with Von Tron is he is so loyal to his school, so loyal to Easton football in New Orleans, that all those boys signed together in February as a team. That's a tradition, and they all signed together. And Cedric didn't want to depart from that tradition. He's a very much a school-first type kid. He never took his officials during his senior season because he wanted to watch film on the weekend. He wanted to prepare for each game. So if you look at it that, you know, what we reported yesterday would also hold true for Cedric Von Tron and Broderick Jones. Georgia has 15 public commitments right now, and only 13 of them are expected at the most to sign during the early period.
One of the things that I said about Jordan Birch before you join us here today is, you know, obviously I have no idea how good of a player this is going to end up being. I don't know if he'll be as impactful in his freshman season as a similar prospect Trayvon Walker turned out to be. But the thing that fascinates me about the Birch recruitment is more about the contested way in which it's going down, and the fact that, you know, Georgia has set up for itself as challenging a scenario as possible. You know, going into Columbia, South Carolina, hometown team needs Birch badly, and yet Georgia has continued to kind of shoot its shot here. Clemson's involved, and Clemson's probably recruited and developed defensive linemen as well as anyone has, and yet Georgia has continued to kind of shoot its shot. Alabama, LSU seemingly try to get in late, and yet, you know, Georgia continues to shoot its shot. I think the Birch recruiting storyline is so interesting because of how contested it is with some of the top programs in college football. And one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to watching Dog Nation cover this story tomorrow is because this would be a real flex for Georgia if it could win with Birch. And all the visits, including the official visit this past weekend, certainly gives you an indication that Georgia has a very good chance of doing just that. But, man, this is no easy recruitment. It'd be quite a statement for Georgia if it could truly win with Birch.
Brandon, I like how modern you're sounding right there. You got flex in there. You've got a lot of things looking in there when you're discussing the Birch recruitment. Let me take a breath on this one, because here's what I think. This is different than a lot of folks. I think that anybody that says they know exactly what Jordan Birch is going to do, I think they're just trying to sound smart. I think one of the things, as you grow up, when you gain intelligence, one of the smartest things you can do is you can say, when you don't know something, you don't know something, and you don't try to fake it until you make it. I think with Jordan Birch, what you've got to do, if you're in my industry, that you've got to lean on years of doing this and maybe pick up a whisper here and whisper there. And it's almost like a process of elimination with a lot of things. That's how you actually become a true analyst in this business and not, hey, I'm just repeating some hush-hush secret I heard from a coach or another coach or somewhere down the line. I think with Burch, you've got to look at Clemson first. Clemson hasn't taken Clemson hasn't hosted Burch, I believe, until since going back to the summer. And that is with the, even though they wanted to get the last official visit, that's even though they wanted him to come to games. And when you look at Clemson now, when it looked like things were trending away with Justin Flo, they immediately locked down on Trenton Simpson, the five-star inside linebacker, yeah, the former Auburn commitment. That, to me, seems like that scholarship was going to go. They had one scholarship left to give, and I think Trenton Simpson got that. The correlation of those two things leads one as an analyst to think that Clemson is likely out of it. You look at Georgia, I think they're definitely in it. He's visited Georgia more than any other school. I think LSU is in it. And in some cases, folks got to look at this realistically. Folks, LSU might even be Burch's pick. South Carolina might be his family's pick because of location. And I think somewhere comfortably, Georgia rests somewhere right in the middle. And don't forget how Burch takes his official visit right before the early signing period. And it was also a time when Jalen Carter, the Georgia commitment, takes his official visit as well. And those two guys got together, got to hang out all weekend. And that's one recruit, Jalen Carter, that it certainly seems like is close to Burch in this class. It's a committed guy to Georgia. I think the thoughts of those two guys playing together are very appealing. I think the blue daughter from Apopka is going to be one of the – when all these list things come out, if you're reading anything where anybody talks about the five biggest freaks or the five biggest impact players in the class, I think Jalen Carter will definitely be one of those. And I think that's why Georgia, I think, sits in a very good spot with Burch this week, simply because of the location, the fit, the ability to play on a strong SEC defense that, where the coaches in place are not going anywhere, and then the location factor – against LSU is also very huge here in my mind.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. And don't forget, there's still time for you to take advantage of a great offer from our friends at Marlowe's. When you purchase a $50 gift card, which is a great gift for anybody on your list here this season because you know it's going to fit, well, as a special thank you to you, Marlowe's going to provide you a complimentary bottle of Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine, a great way to kind of toast the holidays and the brand new year when you purchase a Marlowe's gift card. But when you get a $100 Marlowe's Tavern gift card, you still get the Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine, but Marlowe's also going to offer up to you a $20 complimentary gift card there as well, which my suggestion would be to use that on yourself. Just a great way to celebrate great way to celebrate the holidays at Marlowe's. You can also celebrate Marlowe's if you want to there as well. Just stop in at the tavern in your neighborhood, get the $50 gift card, and get the Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine to go with that. Or get the $100 gift card, enjoy the $20 complimentary gift card, and the Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine there as well. So I think the wide receiver storyline for Wednesday is going to be fascinating. And, you know, the Arian Smith thing is somewhat straightforward. He's going to choose George or he's not. The Jermaine Burton thing may be a little bit more interesting and slightly more moving parts. Reports, obviously, that Georgia got a chance to host Burton this past weekend. And there's also now this weird situation going on at LSU where Rakeem Jarrett, one of those receivers that's been in the fold for LSU now for a while, suddenly decides maybe he doesn't want to be in the fold as much anymore. Jarrett, the five-star, I guess going to hold his recruitment open now till February. Given the fact that Jarrett and Burton play the same position, does Jarrett's decision to hold out and maybe not go to LSU, I don't know if it's Alabama or who for Jarrett, but it's maybe not going to be LSU, does that force LSU to now recruit Burton harder now that it doesn't know for sure if it's going to get Rakeem Jarrett?
Oh, Brandon, going down those tea leaves right there. I think Jarrett's stance seems to be that he is still very much pro LSU, but he's also, like you said earlier, Brandon, there's a reason when kids that are committed don't sign during the early period. That means there's some pause, there's some hesitation. That means that they want to keep looking around. And the routine Jarrett, quite frankly, if he doesn't sign this weekend or this week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, he could become the hottest receiver in the class and one of the most contested prospects in the country, with a lot of people that are looking to add a speed burner, a five-star type receiver to their program. And I think the interesting things about let me try and tie something here together. The interesting things about this time of year is right now, Brandon, are when the draft grades are coming back. And prospects that were on the bubble didn't get a positive grade. They let staff know, and you see a lot of late offers pop up. Or portal guys that are going to want to move on, where there was a case where a young man was going to be a solid second teamer, good depth guy, and now he's looking to move on to another school. And that maybe changes the board really late for a lot of guys. You look at Georgia right now, and you see two recent offers that I know people are going to get the Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass about. I know, Brandon, you definitely would if I know you well at all. Two in-state offers to inside linebackers that just popped up over the last 24 to 36 hours. One of those is DJ Lundy,
yeah,
out of Irwin County in Osceola. And this young man, he wrestles. He's a two-time state champion. I've seen him rolling over down south Georgia boys in big playoff games for the longest time. Some of the clashes he had with Tresman Marshall, now a Georgia freshman, were stuff of South Georgia Class A football legend type stuff. DJ Lundy picks up an offer. He's rated as an athlete. He's a three-star. My thinking there is he is offered there to play inside linebacker for the University of Georgia. And then they get another offer really late from Parkview. You've got Kobe Wilson, inside linebacker, another senior, three-star inside linebacker, currently committed to Memphis. That, to me, screams two things. Number one, potentially very good news for Monty Rice in terms of a draft grade, and if so, tip your hat to him, because that means he has came to Georgia and did what he hoped to do and dreamed to do, and he did it in just three seasons. But the other thing that might happen here is because Georgia wasn't prioritizing inside linebackers at all in this class, except for one, Noah Sewell. Until now, here you are in the 11th hour, and you see Georgia going after a pair of in-state linebacker targets. That must mean either A, really great news for Monty Rice, or B, it must mean somebody in that inside linebacker room is going to look elsewhere and not be a part of the 2020 team.
Yeah, it'll be worth paying attention to. Hey, last thing before we let you go, Jeff, and obviously we could talk for hours and hours, but we'll have to save that for some other time. How surprised would you be, or maybe there's a better way to ask this, but I guess if I was a betting person, I'm betting that Georgia doesn't get C.J. Stroud tomorrow, although I'll obviously be watching closely to see if that indeed goes down. How in this for the second quarterback is Georgia right now?
Yeah, we put this in the forum yesterday. We feel that Georgia is definitely in this for C.J. Stroud. I think one of the things I learned is that he didn't kind of leave Columbus with, the wink, wink, nod, nod, I'll see you in January to that staff. I don't think he's going to tell any of the schools involved here until they learn for themselves, maybe right before he goes live at 12:30 from Rancho Cucamonga High School in California. I think with CJ, it's very interesting, and not to get too deep in weeds here, but for him to have had the most amazing official visit over the weekend at Ohio State, it would have been great if Justin Fields could have hosted him or could have been in the room with him to watch some film and talk about the fit and comfort level in Ryan Day's offense. But unfortunately, Ryan Day and Justin Fields, by a consequence of events, were at the Downtown Athletic Club in New York most of that weekend of his official visit. Day was also having to deal with trying to find a new defensive coordinator, a guy that had been in a lot of those living rooms leading up to the early signing period, and he was trying to reassure recruits that, you know, they were going to get another good guy to be the co-defensive coordinator of that program. And for whatever reason, if we look back and somehow a team that wasn't the crystal ball pick, like which Ohio State is, wasn't the crystal ball pick against C.J. Stroud, ends up signing him anyway, then you would look at that official visit weekend and wonder whether or not Ohio State got to take its best shot to lure in C.J. Stroud late. And it was really through no fault of their own, but actually excellence of their own, that a guy like Fields and their head coach Ryan Day just couldn't be in Columbus to give him the red carpet, the scarlet carpet treatment, let me amend that, the scarlet carpet treatment throughout that whole weekend in Columbus. To answer your question succinctly, Brandon, I think Georgia still really has a shot with C.J. Stroud.
And then I said last one, I'll squeeze in one more tiny one before we get here. Good stuff from you the other day on Eric Reed at DogNation.com. Obviously, Major Burns, another one of these former SEC commits that Georgia's kind of in the mix for. Georgia looking to bolster its defensive back recruitment tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, you could see all those late official visitors. And, man, Brandon, it wouldn't surprise me. Georgia hosted four defensive back targets for their defensive back room during the last weekend of officials before the early signing period. And it wouldn't shock me to see Georgia go 3-for-4 or even 4-for-4 out of that group. You see the way Georgia recruits, the way they play defense, the way they get guys into the league. They've got a Thorpe Award winner now in that legacy for that defensive back room. And every recruit I talk to always says, Kirby Smart was a safety. Kirby Smart played great at safety for Georgia. He's always going to put his nose and eyes in that defensive back room to make sure Georgia is on point there. And recruits really like seeing that, how they know that the head coach is a defensive-minded guy, and they know that Georgia recruits DBs well and develops DBs well, and that Smart is a legacy DB for the program. Those are all types of things, Brandon, that sell very well this time of year leading up to commitments on Wednesday.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Hey, good stuff, Jeff. Thanks for being here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. Of course, I'll remind folks once again, show up at the tavern there in your neighborhood. Enjoy yourself a great holiday lunch or dinner this time of year, but also pick up that $50 Marlowe's gift card. You get the Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine complimentary to you as a thank you from Marlowe's. And when you get the $100 gift card, in addition to the Michelle Brut Sparkling Wine, you also get a $20 complimentary gift card as well. So check that out at the Marlowe's Tavern closest to you. Jeff, I look forward to seeing you busy in studio a lot tomorrow. We'll see if we can twist your arm, get you here on Dog Nation Daily for a couple of minutes as well. And really just going to follow what's going to be a really fun day, one way or another. A lot of mystery and intrigue, and Georgia looking to build itself an elite class once again. Appreciate your time, Jeff, and we'll look forward to speaking to you tomorrow.
Yeah, guys, tomorrow's a big day. So is January the 2nd, so is January the 4th, and so is February the 5th. And I'm sure Brandon will elaborate in that as he transitions to his next segment.
All right, thanks, guys.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
Yeah, Jeff's right. It's not going to stop tomorrow. A lot of it's going to kind of roll its way through the rest of the time. And we're looking forward to following it and see where it goes. Let's go cruise around the SEC here for a minute. Brought to you by our friends at Royal Caribbean. And listen, I can tell you this. Once this recruiting stuff is done, and once this 2019 season is done, I need a vacation. I'm sure many of you kind of feel the same way. And there are vacations, and then there are, you know, vacations. And really, the folks that have been redefining cruise vacations for the last 50 years are our friends at Royal Caribbean. They turned 50 years bold this year, and as a celebration, they're making things bigger and better than ever before. And one of the, I think, the great examples of this is Perfect Day CocoCay. Private island oasis right there in the Bahamas. And an unbelievable spot to be in, no matter what you're interested in. Like the really, really fun stuff, like the big slides and all the stuff that goes along with that. More of the kind of chill, relaxed side. Really, you know, the island's kind of got both. Perfect Day CocoCay provides both of those things. When you go to RoyalCaribbean.com, you can see all this for yourself. You can find out about the ships that sail and make Perfect Day CocoCay part of the itinerary. One of the cool things for me is, living in the Atlanta area where I live, the easiest port for me to get to is the one in Port Canaveral, which is right near Orlando. And so many ships that sail out of Port Canaveral go to the Bahamas, enjoy Perfect Day CocoCay. So if you've never been on a cruise vacation before, I think it's a great way to get started on that. Just check out RoyalCaribbean.com. You can find out about all the things that make Perfect Day CocoCay so much fun, and you can get in touch with a travel advisor. It'd be my advice to you to do just that. Let me do a couple of SEC stories here as we go cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. Mike Bobo has met with reporters in South Carolina upon getting the Gamecocks offensive coordinator job. There was one quote in particular from Bobo that I thought was really interesting. I want to read this. So he's asked a lot of questions, obviously, about Ryan Helinski, and I am very much of the belief that the tandem of Bobo working with Helinski has a chance to be really successful for South Carolina. The one thing that Muschamp has not had in his coaching career is that perfect example of quarterback working with offensive coordinator, making that a happy marriage. You know, Muschamp's a good recruiter. He's obviously a good defensive mind. But the thing that's kind of seemingly perpetually kept him on the hot seat is just the absence of any semblance of offense. Well, Bobo and Helinski, probably the best tandem of quarterback coordinator that he's had in his time as being a head coach. And obviously, when Bobo met with reporters, asked a lot of questions about Helinski, one quote in particular jumped out to me. I'm going to read this from The State, which is a big media entity covering the Gamecocks. Bobo says, I've talked to Ryan. I don't feel bad about saying it. He's got to get better fundamentally as a quarterback. Part of that playing that position is being fundamentally sound. Doesn't matter what style of play you play, if you're not fundamentally good at that position, you're not going to have a chance to be successful at that position. We're going to work hard on fundamentals and doing the little things right. it's one of those things at first blush that might sound a little bit harsh of, wow, you know, Bobo's just met Hilinski and he's already going in on him in a press conference about fundamentals and not quite having his fundamentals being as sharp as they should be. I think the response, though, to that is going to be really positive. I think it's going to be positive from Hilinski, and you better believe that future quarterback recruits, future targets for the Gamecocks, are listening into this really closely. The one thing that all players want to believe is true, it's the reason why private individual coaching has become as much of a cottage industry as it has become and so popular. Players want to believe that there's a fundamental door that can be unlocked, and all of a sudden they're going to have a greater level of success they've ever enjoyed before. And really, Muschamp hasn't had anyone to provide that. If that even exists, if it's true, Muschamp hasn't had anyone that can provide that. Bobo, based on his track record, can kind of point to guys and say, hey, look what I did for this guy, look what I did for that guy. I can do this for you. We're about to get to work on that. So Bobo's kind of honest, blunt assessment, I think, will actually be received pretty well by Hilinski. They like the idea of believing that someone can get them to be better, and I think it really works with recruits. So Mike Bobo already making a little bit of a splash there at South Carolina. I got to give credit where credit's due for a second. Y'all know I'm the ultimate Gator hater. We keep Eddie on the set here each and every day. We like being Gator haters. We don't like Dan Mullen. We don't apologize for that. Mullen actually said something pretty funny, and this is not funny in an ironic way. This is just actually just sort of funny. So the other day, there was this thing where Peter Burns, who's a SEC Network personality, also radio host, was ranking the SEC coaches that he'd most want to go to Vegas with, have fun time in Las Vegas. And Dan Mullen was pretty low on the list. Mullen retweeted Peter Burns saying that he was too low. That's basically the start of all of this. So Dan Mullen gets asked about this because it was Ole Miss coach Lane Kiffin who was at the top of the list. And Mullen kind of said something funny. Let me show you the tweet. Somebody kind of captured this. So I'm going to read this. Michael Bratton on Twitter. Dan Mullen on Lane Kiffin being ranked over him in Peter Burns' list of SEC coaches to visit Las Vegas with. Now here's the line from Mullen. I think I'm a good time guy. I have a lot of fun too. I may not be Joey Freshwater fun. So Mullen, to my knowledge, is the only person to ever in like a sanctioned way bring up Lane Kiffin's supposed alias of Joey Freshwater. That's obviously been talked about on message boards and social media for forever and forever and ever. I don't know that it's ever been welcomed into sort of like polite discussion of mainstream media and things like that. And Mullen just kind of went there. So I got to say, that's pretty fun. You know, I think that Lane Kiffin is obviously an entertaining guy. Maybe I don't agree with all of his personal choices, but I think that he's a pretty entertaining guy. I think his presence in the SEC obviously ups the ante for the entertainment value. And Dan Mullen's actually kind of responded to that pretty well. So Mullen does a lot of corny things, and he's kind of a goofball in a lot of ways, and he obviously looks just like Cousin Eddie from Christmas Vacation. But credit where credit's due here. For being willing to go there with Joey Freshwater, that's actually pretty funny. So I'll give Dan Mullen a little credit for that. All right, a couple other things real, really, really quick here for a moment. I think this is kind of weird. Gus Malzahn, the Auburn coach, is obviously talking about a number of subjects right now, including his new offensive coordinator, Chad Morris. And they spend big bucks to bring in Morris. Morris kind of a high-profile hire, a former head coach, including the SEC in Arkansas. And yet, according to what Malzahn has said this week, it's not abundantly clear if Morris is going to get to call plays for Auburn next year. So the question becomes, why did you hire him? And I do realize that, you know, Malzahn was the play caller for Auburn this past season, so it's not necessarily that simple, necessarily that cut and dry. I do realize that. But this has been the problem that's plagued Auburn forever and forever. It's almost like they are really doomed to sort of live the same existence over and over again. Malzahn gets on the hot seat because of his inability to really make the Auburn offense sing the way it once did way back in 2013 or back when he was OC in 2010. And then he finds a way to get the big win that kind of either saves himself with some boosters or gets a contract extension. Then they kind of do the same thing over and over again. He's had a hard time holding on to offensive coordinators because guys want to be able to grow in their career. They don't want to have a low ceiling put on top of their progress. It's why Rhett Lashley left. It's why the dude from this year probably took the Florida State job. And now you bring in Chad Morris, and he's going to potentially have to live under the same circumstances. I mean, listen, I'm a lot less critical of Gus Malzahn than some people are. I actually thought that Auburn was a pretty good team this year, and I thought Malzahn deserved some credit for that. But this weird tug of war about power and control of the Auburn offense is the kind of thing that seemingly keeps Malzahn on the verge of being in trouble all the time. And even with the hire of Chad Morris, it's not obvious that's going to change. I think that's overall pretty weird. All right, two other quick stories, and we will get ready to go here and move on to something else in the show. So Derrick Brown has announced he will be playing in Auburn's bowl game. A part of that, kind of a surprise. It was a surprise that he came back for senior year. Now he's playing in the bowl game. Looks like Auburn's not going to have any players miss the bowl because of NFL overtures or things like that. Brown kind of sending a message, and I'm not quite so sure if it's a good idea for him, but it probably helps the value of the bowl game, and it probably helps kind of, you know, this very new, quick, modern era that we're living in, and all of a sudden where, you know, these games seem like glorified exhibitions. I guess Derrick Brown's doing his part to keep that from being true. So I guess in a roundabout way, we'll give a little bit of credit to him, although I'm not quite so sure that's the best thing for him individually. Alabama not quite so lucky, though. They're going to have at least two guys miss the bowl game. Terrell Lewis is going to declare for the NFL draft. He's not going to play. And Trevin Diggs is going to sit out the bowl game there as well. So couple of Alabama guys already making the decision to sit out. Derrick Brown's going to play, and there'll be a lot more of these stories coming up. We will make that. Cruise around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. All right, a couple things here real quick. So details emerge on the James Cook arrest, and you know, I guess the one weird part of this is in the story, you can read it at dognation.com, you know, Cook does admit to smoking some marijuana, and honestly, I don't really know what that means anymore. I mean, you know, laws are so different. The way in which sports kind of handles this stuff is so different. There seems to be a little bit of an evolution about how Georgia handles this under the Kirby Smart era. So I'm not quite sure what to make of all of this. I'm not really scandalized by the arrest. I mean, I sort of wish it wouldn't have happened, but not really all that scandalized by it necessarily. I will admit, for selfish reasons, I hope this doesn't lead to a bowl suspension for James Cook in the Sugar Bowl, because I'm eager to see, you know, kind of what he looks like, especially if DeAndre Swift does not play. I think he's probably got a lesson to learn from all of this. Ultimately, this is one of those things of 2-3 weeks from now, I think none of us will remember any of this at all, but those details are out there. You can read more about that at dognation.com. On a happier subject, let's go and acknowledge our top dogs from this week in the NFL, courtesy of our friends from Kroger. And how about a big performance for Chris Conley, the Jacksonville Jaguars wide receiver? Couple touchdowns for him in the 2016 win for the Jags at Oakland, the final game in the history of the black hole. The Jaguars got the win, and Conley was a big part of that. Two touchdowns for him. Congrats there. Also, the great former tandem of Georgia running backs doing big things. Sony Michel, 19 carries, 89 yards, as the Patriots beat up on the Bengals 34-13. And then Nick Chubb goes for 17 carries, 127 yards, and a touchdown for the Cleveland Browns there as well. So those are our top dogs in the NFL, presented by Kroger, and of course, a huge congratulations to all of them. And as we wrap up here, speaking of our friends at Kroger, let me remind you that we're coming up to the end of the Vince Dooley book signing tour at various Krogers. Go to dognation.com. You can see the remaining locations where Coach Dooley is going to be. Make sure you check these out. That's tomorrow in Bonair, Georgia, at the Kroger on Georgia Highway 96. It's going to be Thursday at the Kroger there on Bethel View Road and Cumming. That's a beautiful, beautiful facility. He's going to be there on Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. And then on Friday in Woodstock on the Kroger location, Town Lake Parkway. So I know that's hard to remember. Just check out dognation.com and you can see all the details. But the final book signings for Coach Vince Dooley, the legendary former coach and athletic director at various Krogers. Make sure you check all of that out. Something else to check out as well, our Gator Hater Updater. Really happy to let you know, 1,144 days. That's how long since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten the Georgia Bulldogs. So Mullen may take a shot at Joey Freshwater, but he can't do anything with Georgia. We'll see y'all tomorrow, right back here on Dog Nation Daily.